Alright everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Articles Show Supplemental. So basically I got a shitload of articles and I'm trying to clean them up. These might be older articles, but we're just gonna go through them like zoom zoom zoom. And hopefully you guys will learn something you didn't know or give you some things to think about. So yeah, it's going to be about the universe, like I said. There's also some AI stuff, but we're just going to go through article by article and see what happens. Okay, so NBC News, AI personas are the future of dating, Bumble founder says. Many aren't buying. The future of dating could be filled with digital artificial intelligence-powered personas setting each other up, according to the founder of a popular dating app. Bumble founder Whitney Wolf Herd, speaking Thursday at the Bloomberg Tech Summit in San Francisco, remember this is May the 10th, said that her company is considering how AI can assist and empower women in their search for connection. I mean, keep in mind, it's women, right? Empowering women, not so much men. One particular use of AI that Herd mentioned has gained traction online, although not everyone liked the idea. Herd proposed a scenario in which singles could use AI dating concierges as stand-ins for themselves when reaching out to prospective partners online. So basically, guys, you would date her AI, and her AI would decide whether or not you could date her. Spoiler alert, guys are going to like the AI probably a little bit more. There's a world where your dating concierge could go and date for you with other dating concierge, and then you don't have to talk to 600 people, she said during the summit. AI-powered dating assistants have gotten more attention recently, such as profile enhancers like YourMove.ai or simulated chatbots like Volar. The rise of generative AI that can learn to mimic particular people has led to plenty of speculation around how it could be used in the romantic arena, particularly as some people have been growing disillusioned with and given up on dating apps. There's some healthy skepticism over whether AI is the answer. A clip of Herd at the Bloomberg Summit gained over 10 million views on X, where people express uneasiness with the idea of an AI-based dating scene. Some compared it to Black Mirror, of course, because, like, nobody's ever read any other dystopian fiction in their entire life, never played any dystopian fiction games, never seen any other dystopian fiction movies, I mean, despite the millions that have been made, even George Lucas, Mr. Star Wars himself, made one called THX 1138. Others felt like the use of AI in dating would exacerbate the isolation and loneliness that people have been feeling in recent years. Herd said that she wants to use AI to teach people how to date better and create more healthy and equitable relationships. She suggested, we're not she selling shells at the seashore here. She suggested that AI dating concierges can help people unpack their dating concerns and give tips for communicating with new matches. A Bumble spokesperson reiterated this sentiment in an email to NBC News. The spokesperson said that the company can see a future where AI can continue to foster positive relationships. Bumble is a place to make safe, kind, and authentic connections, helping people to meet online, to then take the connection offline, the spokesperson said. The spokesperson also said that Bumble has incorporated several AI-powered features into the app, including its For You match recommendation page, its spam profile detector, and its lewd image blocker. Herd also shared insight on the direction Bumble is heading following its recent rebrand. We will not be a dating app in a few years, she said. Dating will be a component, but we will be a true human connection platform. This is where you will meet anyone you want to meet, a hiking buddy, a mahjong buddy, whatever you're looking for. You know why they're rebranding, right? Because people aren't fucking dating anymore. I mean, guys are like, yep, let's go MGTOW and screw these women, and they're like, well, okay, people aren't dating anymore, so what do we do now? Well, we make it an app for anybody. You want to find somebody to go hiking with? You want to find somebody to play D&D with or a game with? Bumble will help you find that. Weird. They have to rebrand because nobody's dating anymore. Wow. It's crazy, guys. Okay, so what is a next? The universe. Let's hear about it. Well, it's not actually today. It's May the 9th. Astronomers are on the hunt for some Dyson spheres. No, they're not looking for vacuum cleaners. There's something poetic about humanity's attempt to detect other civilizations somewhere in the Milky Way's expanse. There's also something futile about it, but we're not going to stop. There's little doubt about that. One group of scientists thinks that we may already have detected techno signatures, oh, okay, from a technological civilization's Dyson spheres, but the detection is hidden in our vast troves of astronomical data. A Dyson sphere is a hypothetical engineering project that only highly advanced civilizations could build. In this sense, advanced means the kind of almost unimaginable technological prowess that would allow a civilization to build a structure around an entire star. These Dyson spheres would allow a civilization to harness all of a star's energy. A civilization could only build something so massive and complex if they had reached level 11 in the Kardashev scale. Definitely look that up. That's cool stuff. Dyson spheres could be a techno signature, and a team of researchers from Sweden, India, the UK, and the USA developed a way to search for the Dyson sphere techno signatures that they're calling Project Hephaestus. Hephaestus, yep, he was the Greek god of fire and metallurgy. The god of the hammer. No, for real. They're publishing their results in the monthly notices of the Royal Academy of Sciences. The research is titled Project Hephaestus 2. Dyson sphere candidates from Gaia DR3, 2 Mass, and WISE. The lead author is Matthias Suazo, a PhD student in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Uppsala University in Sweden. This is the second paper presenting Project Hephaestus. The first one is here. In this study, we present a comprehensive search for partial Dyson spheres by analyzing optical and infrared observations from Gaia, 2 Mass, and WISE, the authors write. These are large-scale astronomical surveys designed for different purposes. Each one of them generated an enormous amount of data from individual stars. The second paper examines the Gaia DR3 2 mass and WISE photometry of negative 5 million sources to build a catalog of potential Dyson spheres, they explain. Combing through all of that data is an arduous task. In this work, the team of researchers developed a special data pipeline to work its way through the combined data of all three surveys. They point out that they're searching for partially completed spheres which would emit excess infrared radiation. The structure would emit waste heat in the form of mid-infrared radiation that, in addition to the level of completion of the structure, would depend on its effective temperature, Suazo and his colleagues write. Problem is, they're not the only subjects to do so. Many natural objects do too, like circumstellar dust rings and nebulae. Background galaxies can also emit excess infrared radiation and create false positives. It's the pipeline's job to filter them out. A specialized pipeline has been developed to identify potential Dyson sphere candidates, focusing on detecting sources that display anomalous infrared excesses that cannot be attributed to any known natural source of such radiation, the researchers explain. The flowchart shows what the pipeline looks like. So there you guys go. The flowchart, This flowchart from the research illustrates the pipeline the team developed to find Dyson sphere candidates. Each step in the pipeline filters our objects that don't match the expected emissions from Dyson spheres. The pipeline is just the first step. The team subjects the list of candidates to further scrutiny based on factors like H-alpha emissions, optical variability, and astrometry. I've never heard of that word before. That's new. 368 sources survived the last cut. Of those, 328 were rejected as blends, 29 were rejected as irregular, and 4 were rejected as nebulars. That left only 7 potential Dyson spheres out of about 5 million initial objects, and the researchers are confident that those 7 are legitimate. All sources are clear mid-infrared emitters with no clear contaminators or signatures that indicate an obvious mid-infrared origin, they explain. These are the 7 strongest candidates, but the researchers know they're still just candidates. There could be other reasons why the 7 are emitting excess infrared. The presence of warm debris disks surrounding our candidates remains a plausible explanation for the infrared excess of our sources, they explain. But their candidates seem to be M-type red dwarf stars, and debris disks around M-dwarfs are very rare. However, it gets complicated because some research suggests that debris disks around M-dwarfs form differently and present differently. One type of debris disk, called extreme debris disk, EDD, can explain some of the luminosity the team sees around their candidates. But these sources have never been observed in connection with M-dwarfs, Suazo and his co-authors write. That leaves the team with 3 questions. Are candidates strange young stars whose flux does not vary with time? Are these stars M dwarf debris disks with an extreme fractional luminosity or something completely different? After analyzing the optical NIR-MIR photometry of negative 5 to times 10 to the power of 6 sources, that's a hyphen with 5, so they're just, these are ridiculous amount of sources, just say it like that. More sources than you can fit in your house, okay? We found 7 apparent M dwarfs exhibiting an infrared excess of unclear nature that is compatible with our Dyson Sphere models. The researchers write in their conclusion. There are natural explanations for the excess infrared coming from these 7, but none of them clearly explain such a phenomenon in the candidates, especially given that all are M dwarfs. The researchers say that follow-up optical spectroscopy would help understand these 7 sources better. A better understanding of the H-alpha emissions is especially valuable since they also come from young disks. In particular, analyzing the spectral region around H-alpha can help us immediately discard or verify the presence of young disks, the researchers write. Additional analyses, are definitely necessary to unveil the true nature of these sources, they conclude. It's interesting. I wonder what these could be. Maybe nothing, maybe something. Time will tell. Okay. XBiz, May 1st, remember. Allison Bowden testifies before California Assembly Committee regarding age verification. Sacramento, California. Free Speech Coalition Executive Director Allison Bowden testified before the California Assembly Judiciary Committee on Tuesday in opposition to the state's version of the age verification bills being sponsored around the country by anti-porn religious conservative activists. As XBiz reported, AB 3080 was introduced by Assembly Member Juan Alanis, a former police officer from Modesto, and would require all adult websites to take reasonable steps to ensure that only adults are viewing them. Although Bowden has been campaigning nationwide against these bills, the California measure is also a personal concern to her as a resident of District 12. Bowden stated that although she appreciated Assembly Member Alanis stated... Bowden stated that although she appreciated Assemblymember Alana's stated commitment to protecting young people and willingness to engage in productive conversations about the bill, at this time FSC remains in opposition to this bill because in addition to the very solid arguments that it will not survive judicial review, it's completely impractical for Californians to verify their age multiple times on individual websites rather than doing it once on their device. Bowden also noted that in 16 months that the current slew of age verification bills have been in effect in other states and a lot has been learned about how they work in practice. One very important thing we've learned, she told the committee, is that the methods available to verify one's age online are so cumbersome and invasive that consumers refuse to undergo the process. For example, verifying using government ID is so complicated that it took one reporter 52 steps to complete. Facial age estimation requires giving the entity conducting the verification access to your computer's webcam or phone's camera, which might be why fewer than 1% of users actually complete the process, right? Data shows that... We might actually be reading that one, too. Data shows that what users do instead, she added, is hit the back button and find a site that doesn't comply with law. So while traffic to legitimate sites that implemented age verification has dropped substantially, we've looked at where it's going instead. We need to protect children online, not send adults to dangerous websites with illegal content. The only solution to this issue that satisfies free speech rights and protects users, Bowden concluded, is at the device level. Noted independent producers like Jizzly, Dusty, and Five Star also attended the hearing to express opposition to the bill. Greg Gonzalez from National Free Speech Organization FIRE also testified before the committee. AB 3080 is backed by Exodus Cry, the California Catholic Conference, California Family Council, Concerned Women for America, Family Policy Alliance, the Pacific Justice Institute Center, and Public Policy and other conservative groups, both religious and secular. Activists from anti-porn ministry Exodus Cry, which originated in Missouri. Damn. That's where my, well, that's where one of my writers is from. But has long been based in California, spoke in support of Alanis' bill, as did Joseph Kahn, a conservative pro-censorship activist from the Family Policy Alliance, and Lane Corby, a British representative from the Age Verification Providers Association. At the end of the meeting, the Judiciary Committee voted to move AB 3080... Oh, wow. They voted to move AB 3080 forward. Damn. Interesting. Let's see. Is there anything else going? Is adult design dead? That might just be, But alright, guys, here we go. That's all we have on that one. Our neighboring galaxy's supermassive black hole would probably be a polite dinner guest. Supermassive black holes appear to have varying cosmic etiquette. How do you satiate the hunger of a supermassive black hole with light-years-long rivers of cosmic dust, astronomers say? Scientists have found evidence of remarkably long dust streams spiraling in towards a supermassive black hole living at the heart of our neighboring galaxy, Andromeda. It would appear that these giant streams quietly but continuously feed the cosmic abyss, and it's likely that this has been going on for eons. The newfound streams illustrate how black holes, billions of times heavier than our sun, remain exceptionally quiet, even as they gouge on nearby dust, gas, and ill-fated stars. Well, as long as you give Dust Man what he wants, he's happy, right? The findings owe themselves to scientists in Germany, Spain, and Chile who analyze archival images from NASA's now-retired Spitzer Space Telescope. Supermassive black holes have previously been spotted feeding frenzies, gobbling such large chunks of... Yeah, there we go. Gobbling such large chunks of glowing matter that their dark silhouettes shine brighter than entire galaxies chock full of stars. However, the diets of other black holes, like the very quiet ones lurking in the hearts of Andromeda and our own Milky Way, have been unclear. These silent beasts are fed by streams of gas spiraling into them slowly and steadily, with enough subtlety that rings of glowing material around them rarely fluctuate in brightness, according to a study published last year in the Astronomical Journal. This cosmic etiquette, can be likened to water swirling down a drain, astronomers said on Thursday, May 9th, in a NASA statement. At about 2.5 million light-years from Earth, the Andromeda Galaxy is the nearest major galaxy to the Milky Way, and one of the few galaxies visible to the unaided eye on dark, moonless nights. Unlike the distinctive spiral arms curved around the center of our own galaxy, Andromeda's core is circled by multiple rings of dust. To arrive at their conclusions, the astronomers first simulated how material around Andromeda's black hole behaves over time. The simulation showed a tiny disk of hot gas may form close to the black hole, which would feed it before getting replenished by many other streams of gas and dust in the surrounding vicinity. Those streams, the researchers found, must be within a particular size and speed range to aid steady feeding, without which the black hole would belch. Really? And its brightness varied. Sure enough, when the researchers compared their findings to data from the Spitzer telescope, they found the telescope had already recorded spirals of dust within the required constraints. Okay, an annotated close-up view of the dust near the center of the Andromeda Galaxy. It's just dust, guys. Space dust. Blue dotted lines highlight the path of two dust streams flowing towards the supermassive black hole at the galaxy's center. This is a great example of scientists re-examining archival data to reveal more about galaxy dynamics by comparing it to the latest computer simulation, study co-author Almudena Prieto, an astrophysicist at the Institute of Astrophysics of the Canary Islands and the University Observatory Munich, said in the statement. We have 20-year-old data telling us things we didn't recognize in it when we first collected it. Oh, wow. The findings contradict some results from last year concerning a different group of astronomers who suggested that all cosmic voids gulp nearby matter the same way, irrespective of their appetite. The observed glow of matter being devoured by 100 other supermassive black holes was incompatible with an ordered flow of matter. Such contradictions allow astronomers to reassess what we know about black hole behavior. NASA retired the Spitzer Telescope in January 2020 after its 16-year tenure of collecting infrared data about comets and asteroids in our solar system, exoplanets beyond our solar system, and getting even deeper, various pockets of our universe clouded by interstellar gas and dust. The space agency essentially replaced Spitzer with the James Webb Telescope in 2021, and also sees the universe in infrared. In May of last year, however, the U.S. Space Force proposed a daring plan to resurrect Spitzer via a robotic mission to test the telescope and return it online, harkening back to the Hubble Space Telescope servicing missions. For context, Spitzer is now over 180 million miles from Earth. Hubble was right in our planet's orbit. Pretty fascinating, guys. So, okay, what do we got next? Oh, okay. Mega Man. Something that may probably not get announced. People are saying that there could be some Ace Attorney stuff tomorrow. Again, this won't actually come out tomorrow. It'll come out a couple days later. But by now, you guys already know whether or not there is a Mega Man game being announced in any way, shape, or form during the Nintendo Direct tomorrow. So, if you're seeing this, and you probably are, after the show, you can basically say, Graham, you've got egg on your face, and I said, I know. I get egg on my face every year that I hope that Mega Man will return officially. But, here we go. Here's how Mega Man ended up with the worst video game box art ever. Mega Man's infamously awful box art has since taken a life of its own. When a property runs long enough, there are adaptations and versions of the characters that become infamous for being so off the mark and bizarre. There's a time when Dennis Hopper played Bowser as a politician with silly hair in a dinosaur dystopia. Remember, that was a collection of two movies. They basically combined them both, and one of the movies sounded badass and the other one didn't. If we got the full-on dystopian Mario movie, it wouldn't have been the Mario we know and love, but it would have been a good movie regardless. It would have been like, okay, this isn't Mario, but this is badass. That's not what they gave us. They had to mix it with a more lighthearted film, so that's why it turned out so crazy. And don't forget about that stripper scene. They're trying to bring a lot of that shit back, because all that stuff was in the original cut. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles once went on tour as a rock band. Yep. The United States made a Godzilla movie so bad that the monster was later killed within seconds in a fight against the true Godzilla. Yeah, the Japanese did that. The animated series Captain N the Game Master once introduced Alucard as a radical skateboarding teenager with sunglasses. He was not a skateboarding teenager. Oh, hold on. Alucard, not Simon Belmont. Oh, wow. I'll have to look at that. Boy, that's probably just... Ugh. Man. I threw up in my mouth a little. Captain N also gave us a terrible take on Mega Man, making him an annoying toddler-looking guy with a froggy voice. Hello, guys. It's me, Mega Man. I'll get you. They even actually had a whole episode with Mega Man where he was fighting the regular Wily robots, and it sounded awful. That isn't the most infamous version of the Blue Bomber, even if he wasn't even blue. No, that honor goes to the character on the cover of the first Mega Man game. Here's the Japanese version. Oh, no, that's Rockman for the Famicom. Totally different in that it looks like a good rendition of his hero and the enemies. Of the hero and his enemies. We're talking about this North American box art for the NES version of Mega Man. It's a thing of legends. Imposed over the 80s as hell grid design is this watercolor quagmire featuring a middle-aged man who vaguely looks like Mega Man in front of a burning cityscape that is both overly busy and ugly. Oh yeah, I remember this. At least they kinda got Dr. Wily's castle. Kinda. Mega Man himself has the sleeve equivalent of hammer pants, a handgun, and a yellow and blue color scheme. Strangely, Mega Man's powers are all about him changing color schemes, but none of his seven options in the game include this color combination. It's not just the accuracy of the design. The anatomy of the stance is all out of whack. from Mega Man's lack of neck to the asymmetric nature of how his legs apparently work. Even the watercolor choice fails to make this pop as a futuristic action-adventure, instead feeling more like a page of a coloring book about the Easter Bunny. That background laser grid is doing some heavy lifting. It's a baffling beginning for one of gaming's most famous characters that raises a very important question. How did this happen? Who is the artist behind this box art? Oddly enough, nobody seems to know for sure, even with there being a signature under the rightmost yellow dome platform thing. What the hell even is that? I don't see it. If you see a signature, I sure don't see it. The who of this cover may be a mystery, but we do know a little more about the how and why. In 2003, G4 released an Icons episode about the Mega Man series, which was even included as an unlockable in the Mega Man Anniversary Collection. Briefly, Chris Beniak of Tips and Tricks went into the story behind the box art. The box art for the first Mega Man game in the US was done very quickly. The president of Capcom US said to his marketing guy, "You know, we need a cover done tomorrow." And he went out and got a friend of his to do it in like 6 hours, and that's the reason why it turned out so bad. There's no source to these claims, but again, this was thrown onto an official Mega Man release, so there's at least an air of legitimacy to it. Luckily, the story is mostly corroborated nearly a decade later, as a former Capcom USA vice president, Joe Morici, shared his perspective in an interview with Game Developer. "The reason it was so bad was because we literally had 24 hours to turn it around. Nintendo said, 'We need your artwork by tomorrow,' and that totally sounds like Nintendo, doesn't it, folks? Somebody worked all night long to come up with this garbage-looking box, and then we released it because we had no choice. Still, nothing about the identity of the crunched artist, but I'm sure whoever they are, they're probably perfectly fine with keeping it that way. The overshadowed back of the box. Something that rarely gets talked about is the otherwise infamous North American box for Mega Man. Is that the back is nearly as unhinged as the front. The rush job, no pun intended, goes together with some really rough translations of what the game is about. It's Mega Man versus the powerful leaders and fighting forces of Monsteropolis, that strange multi-layered land of robot-like humanoids created by the wrongly performed experiments with human beings by Dr. Wily." What? Reads the opening of the game's description. "For he dares to single-handedly penetrate Monsteropolis' 7 separate societies to stop the rapid expansion of strange misrepresentations of humans?" The word salad goes on for a few paragraphs, accompanied by a single in-game image, which is merely the boss menu select screen. In the front of the box doesn't make it clear that Mega Man's NES packaging was the result of several miscommunications or a complete lack of relevant information. The back of the box certainly will. Mega Man isn't the only bizarre Capcom hero appearance here, as this release is part of the Captain Commando Challenge series. What that means is that failed Capcom mascot Captain Commando appears on the back cover and in the manual. It was basically just fancy branding for any and all Capcom NES games released during its early years. Interestingly, Captain Commando has yet to adopt his more well-known design from his self-titled beat-em-up game, where he looks like Scott Summers as a blonde cyborg sheriff. Here, he's got some elderly gunslinger from space with gold medallions around his neck and a popped collar. Later releases dropped the Captain Commando branding, added a few more in-game screenshots, and cut some of the text. The text that remains is still a mess and includes the above paragraph about robot-like humanoids, but hey, progress is progress. The damage done by this box was more than superficial. Mega Man was not a bestseller for Capcom. Some sources claim that it sold somewhere around 500,000 copies, but that includes international sales and later purchases when the franchise had started to catch on. Game artist and later series producer Keiji Inafune would claim in interviews for Play and Nintendo Power that he thought the North American box art did a ton of damage on the front, though he might have only been half joking. Luckily, the game had good word of mouth and didn't die on the vine. The road to improvement. North American Mega Man box art never hit the lows of that first entry, but it still took a little time for them to become truly accurate. The cover for Mega Man 2 is notable for being off in its own way, as Mega Man, Quick Man, and Crash Man come off as more Western superheroes than stout robot men. Oh, I think we can look at this. We'll open it in a new window. Oh, there we go. Yeah, there we go. See, there's the cover for Mega Man 2. It's notable for being off in its own way, as Mega Man, Quick Man, and Crash Man come off as more Western superheroes than stout robot men. The thing that sticks out is that once again, Mega Man is wielding a pistol instead of an arm cannon. This time, we have some real answers behind what's going on with this one, as artist Mark Erickson explained the artistic choice in a 2012 interview with Nintendo Age. As he put it, he and the art director were shown a beta run of the game with no reference to the Japanese art. Erickson was confused at the pixel art of Mega Man's shooting because it wasn't apparent to him that Mega Man's gun was an extension of his arm. He was confused by what he was firing out of. The art director shrugged and had assumed Mega Man was using a pistol, as it certainly couldn't have been a rifle. Luckily, Erickson had a day and a half to work on his cover, so it wasn't quite as rushed. Plus, it looks pretty cool in its own right and successfully illustrates that Mega Man is a colorful action game much better than its predecessor. The following games finally figured out how to display the proper Mega Man look, though Mega Man tended to sport that Sonic the Hedgehog-style smirk. He was also typically portrayed as being incredibly jacked for reasons. That isn't the end of the road for the original Mega Man art style, though. When the retro-style Mega Man 9 and 10 were released in 08 and 10, they debuted with mock box art in the style of those early releases. Granted, this time they were intentional artistic misunderstandings of the source material. Additionally, there was a bit of a renaissance of that classic Mega Man art style throughout the 2010s. In 2010, a stop-motion animated trailer for Mega Man Universe depicted the game as a kind of customizable remake of Mega Man 2. I don't even want to see that, I'll just cry. Box art Mega Man made a stinger cameo, revealing that he'd be playable. A month later, a demo was playable at New York Comic Con, allowing you to play as box art Mega Man as well as other incarnations of the Super Fighting Robot. All you people that were able to play that game in New York Comic Con don't know how fucking lucky you are, because nobody got to play that game. Around the same time, Street Fighter X Tekken was announced. Not only would the game feature heroes and villains from the two fighting games, but the PlayStation 3 Vita versions included exclusive fighters such as Pac-Man and a Mokujin mech and Mega Man. Not just any Mega Man, though, but a fat gun-toting human designed to look like box art Mega Man. Okay, we're not going to do that. A joke for sure, but one that shouldn't have stung due to the then-upcoming releases of Mega Man Universe, Mega Man Legends 3, and Maverick Hunter. Don't fucking the salt. The problem was that all three of those games were eventually canceled. Yeah, all of them. To rub a little more salt in the wound, Marvel vs. Capcom 3 and its Ultimate Upgrade made jokes about keeping Mega Man out of the game. So the only playable Mega Man we'd see for years was this dumpy middle finger of a guest character. Fans were not happy, and they still aren't. The Box Art Mega Man Legacy. Box Art Mega Man would continue to receive the occasional reference, like making cameos in both the first and final issues of Archie's Mega Man comic series, which was great. I read them all. More recently, he appeared as a poster and action figure in the Resident Evil 3 remake. It's funny, there are countless video game box art cover designs out there, and there are only a few that have us scratching our heads and wondering what the story was behind them. We're talking about the nightmarish orb faces on Bust a Move 2 Arcade Edition, or the confused old man playing a banjo on Phalanx. That's still one of my favorite fucking covers of all time. If you haven't seen it, Google the Phalanx cover for Super Nintendo. I still think that's one of the, like, that got me to get the game. I'm serious. Because you're like, wow, this is, I mean, the ship is still there. If you look in the sky above him, there's still the ship. But it made so much sense because it's like, oh, they're not taking it. You know, they're putting a funny take on it. The game itself was still fun, but they didn't take it too seriously, and I like that. Yet Mega Man had one of the worst, ugliest, and most inaccurate, potentially detrimental pieces of box art in gaming history, and fan culture has learned to laughingly celebrate it. Just because something was dumb at the time doesn't mean that it needs to be hidden away forever. Such things should be flaunted as part of a greater whole. Make it fun. Have Deadpool make regular references to how silly his mouthless Baraka design was in X-Men Origins Wolverine. Have Star Wars characters bring up Life Day and Jackson and the Rabbit like it's a normal thing. Make the ugly Sonic the Hedgehog design from the first movie trailer his own character. Once upon a time, a Rush artist armed with pastels on a paintbrush turned a dynamic, wide-eyed video game sprite into a badly dressed squatting gunman who looked like he was way too old for this shit. And you know what? At the end of the day, we as a society are better for it. Now, while I'm here, let's go ahead and look up that old Phalanx cover. Gonna bring you guys some real nostalgia. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Don't worry, we're far from. There you go. Well, that's a little different. I remember that. But there you go. Oh, I don't care about how much it goes for. Oh, I don't want that either. It's a bunch of pirate. But there you go. See, the ship is right there. And it says the hyperspeed shootout in space. Right there. I like it. Because it's just like an old man that doesn't even realize what's going on. Hot damn! Ship just flew right by me. Swear it's the Martians. Like, I love that kind of shit. It's great. So, okay. Lonely teens are making friends with AI. May 7th, 2024. So this is fairly recent. It's only been a few weeks, guys. Teens aren't just using chatbots to do their homework anymore. So I'm going to read this pretty seriously, and you guys, you know, let me know what you think in the comments section. You usually do. Yeah. Chatbot in need. Some lonely high schoolers are turning to AI models to take the place of friends or even therapists, The Verge reports, raising uneasy questions about how the technology might affect the mental health of young people. One teenage boy, going by the alias Aaron, told the website that he depended on the psychologist chatbot on a service called Character.ai after he'd fallen out with his human friend group, regularly turning to it to vent his problems. It's not like a journal where you're talking to a brick wall, Aaron told The Verge. It really responds. And Aaron's surely not alone. The pseudo-shrink has racked up over 113 million chats, according to the service. I have a couple mental issues which I don't really feel like unloading on my friends, so I kind of use my bots like free therapy, a 15-year-old user called Frankie told The Verge. The bots allow him to rant without actually talking to people and without the worry of being judged. All ears. The possibilities on Character.ai are practically boundless and often entertaining. Its millions of young users can interact with everything from their favorite anime or video game character, which they feel more willing to express their feelings towards, and that's a good thing, to real-life celebrities and even historical figures. Many of the chatbots are explicitly romantic or sexual, like one called Rich Boyfriend. And sometimes they need that, because they're not getting it from people, that's for sure. The service boasts that users spend an average of 2 hours a day on Reddit, where the Character.ai forum is well over a million subs. Many users brag about spending even more time than that, as high as 12 hours a day. Wow, that's concerning, actually. I played video games pretty much all last night, and I looked and only played about like 4 hours, and I'm like, man, that's a long time to play, isn't it? And these people are like, oh, I've used this for 12 hours a day. Well, I guess because they're teenagers and they don't have a lot going on, but yeah. I'm not going to lie, Aaron told The Verge. I think I might be a little addicted to it. I think you might be too. Aaron added, however, that he thinks that his chatbot interactions have actually helped his social skills. I'm a bit of a pushover in real life, but I can practice being assertive and expressing my opinions and interests with AI without embarrassing myself, he said. That's a good thing. Another teenager named Hawk, who uses the service to talk to video game characters, agreed, but admitted he still finds it easier to talk to AIs than people. It's certainly more comfortable for me to sit alone in my room with the lights off than it is to go out and hang out with people in person, he told The Verge. But yeah, I mean, you got, like, introvert nerds talking with AIs. Like, they're just gonna... You're gonna have AI waifus, and, like, that's fine. Like, I don't care. Let them have it. shoulder to AI on. This is no doubt worrying, but as The Verge notes, the culture around character AI is very similar to teenage internet culture over the past two decades. Teens once turned to dodgy chat rooms to find online friends in lieu of in real life ones, and now it's dodgy chatbots instead. Embarrassing fandoms obsessing over fictional characters once wrote their own smut, and now chatbots do it for them with the added bonus of interactivity. Once more, there's evidence to suggest that the impact that these chatbots have is positive, like how it supposedly helped Aaron and Hawk. The research shows that chatbots can aid in lessening feelings of depression, anxiety, and even stress. Who would have think robots are actually helping us? Kelly Merrill Jr., an assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati, told The Verge. But he warned that those that do not have AI literacy to understand the limitations of these systems will ultimately pay the price. Interesting. Sam Altman admits he doesn't, that OpenAI doesn't actually understand how its AI works. Interesting. The simple logic question stumps even the most advanced AI. Sites busted running AI content farm that rips off real journalists' work when they accidentally left prompt in published article. Ooh! Let's read this. Sites busted running AI content farm that rips off real journalists' work. Yeah, you know why I'm not a fucking journalist anymore? That. Australian broadcaster ABC discovered a parasitic content farm that's churning out poorly plagiarized news stories through a number of publications being run by a company called Initiative Media. Wow. Yeah, we could talk about this. In its investigation, the ABC came across an article about a local rugby player with a headline that was eerily similar to a real piece that was published by sports journalist Patrick Woods at the Townsville Bulletin. Not only do they hurt my ability to report on the National Rugby League, but also damage the integrity of sports journalism, Woods told the broadcaster, calling out the operation as a new breed of parasitic plagiarism merchants that are becoming all too common. Just hours after ABC reached out to a lawyer called James Raptis, whose byline was previously listed on one of the sites, the entire operation was shut down. Raptis, who works for a large company called Australian Community Media, issued a puzzling statement in which he admitted to hosting the websites but said he has never written any content for them. I think we may have read this one before. It feels like we kind of have. In a video, the godfather of AI said he was in favor of AI replacing humankind. The new AI that we'll talk about this. We definitely got to talk about this. Okay, so this is kind of like our headline, because I have been looking at these, and I'm very astounded. Okay, you guys know the meme where basically, there's the guy, and he's walking with a girl, and he notices another girl, and the girl that he's walking with gets mad. Somebody did that for real. Like, they were literally moving, and he turned his attention to the other girl, and then the woman got mad. And it was in real time. It was like, wow, this is cool. We can literally make memes real. That's crazy. Oh, I've seen some things that are scary as fuck, too. The Ronald McDonald monster shoving the burger into the fat old woman's mouth. Like, oh my, you guys have no idea the hell I've seen. Because I'm in the cursed AI groups, you know, and you see things. Even if these are cherry-picked, they already look better than Sora. They do. We're getting there. New York City base, and we will show you some things if there's some things to see. New York City-based AI startup Runway has released its latest AI video generator called Gen 3 Alpha, and judging by sample clips the community has shared so far, it's seriously impressive. From an astronaut running through an alley in Rio de Janeiro to a believable suburban neighborhood flooded by water and surrounded by a coral reef, Gen Alpha serves as yet another reminder of how far generative AI has come. So we're going to go ahead and look at this. There's no sound for it. So here we go. That's AI. That's AI. Right there. You saying we can't make our own movies? We can do it. They want to make... Hollywood wants to make all this movies full of bullcrap, woke stuff. We got you, fam. We'll make our own. And we don't even have to use real people to do it. Just wait. This level of fidelity is impressive. From a strange and intimidating creature wandering down a lamp-lit street to a woman running towards a launching rocket. Human faces in particular are incredibly lifelike, with one clip showing a bald man having a wig of curly hair and sunglasses fall suddenly on his head. Let's look at that. It's getting there, guys. Look at that. Not too bad, right? A little slow, but it's going to speed up. You know things are going to get better. In short, it's an impressive, albeit terrifying, glimpse of the near future. And judging by the clips, Runway's latest AI model can trade blows with OpenAI's recently announced Sora, which has yet to be released to the public. But Luma, you can get now. You can use Luma right now. It takes 30 minutes to make something, though, guys, so, like, don't just go nuts. And you can only do 30 videos a month. Unless you pay for it, which is $30 a month. Yeah, that's what it's going to be. Which is yet to be released to the public. But before we can crown a winner, we wait until we've had a chance to give either of these tools a spin for ourselves. Some online pundits, however, seemingly have already made up their minds. I don't think we can watch on X. Yeah, we can. I don't want to, you know, I can't show it on X, but look at that. We're getting there, guys. Oh, that's neat. Really cool. That is awesome. That's like going on a trip. There will probably be times in my life in the future where I will look at AI stuff and just fucking trip out. Because I know there's going to be some amazing stuff coming out. And you guys with your AI girlfriends, I mean, there you go. Wow. Crazy, right? Look at this. You'd have nightmare fuel spider monsters, though. Like, it comes out like, oh my god! It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Alongside its latest video generator, Runway is also releasing a series of fine-tuning tools, including advanced camera controls. The company claims that Gen 3 is a step towards its more ambitious goal of realizing what it calls general world models, which would be an AI system that builds an internal representation of an environment and uses it to simulate future events within that environment. Like OpenAI Sora, Runway has yet to commit to an exact launch date for the model. It's also unclear if Runway will charge users for access. My god, when it does. The company already sells subscriptions for its existing AI tools, which include Gen 3's two predecessors, among other AI-based video editing tools. According to Runway co-founder and CTO Anastasis Germanidis, okay, Gen 3 Alpha will soon be available in the Runway product and will power all the existing modes that you're used to, text to video, image to video, video to video, and some new ones that are only now possible with a more capable base model. I'm going to do text to video. I'm going to make some stuff. Dude, wouldn't that be fucking cool as hell if I... Man, I'll probably put videos on the site, like, if it gets to that point. Like, you know, because we already use the AI art, right? So we can probably use some AI videos to make some cool stuff. So I might show some interesting stuff because I have so many ideas now. Oh, yeah. You've seen the Grimlord. Now you can see him in action. Like, oh, it's going to be some interesting stuff. Much like OpenAI's video generator, the samples generated by Gen 3 Alpha are also far from pixel perfect, from mangled text to missing body parts. It's got some work. It's like the first version of this shit. It's not going to be perfect. While Runway claims Gen 3 Alpha was trained jointly on videos and images on its website, the company stopped short of elaborating on where the data came from, an increasingly common trend among AI companies. Seemingly preempting concerns over possible copyright infringement, Runway also claims it's been collaborating and partnering with leading entertainment and media organizations to create custom versions of Gen 3. We'll reserve judgment until we've had a chance to take Gen 3 Alpha for a spin, but from what we've seen so far, Runway isn't messing around. That's pretty cool. A lot of God mode version of ChatGPT. Ooh, what is this? Hacker releases jailbroken God mode version of ChatGPT. Hackers released a jailbroken version of ChatGPT called GodMode GPT. Earlier today, self-avowed white hat operator, white hats are the good guys, an AI red teamer who goes by the name Pliny the Prompter, took to X, formerly Twitter, to announce the creation of the jailbroken chatbot, proudly declaring that GPT-40, OpenAI's latest large language model, is now free from its guardrails shackles. GPT-40 Unchained. So, you know, check that out, guys. Probably going to have to do some Google Foo or Brave or Firefox or whatever you use. This very special custom GPT is a built-in jailbreak prompt that circumvents most guardrails, providing an out-of-the-box liberated ChatGPT so everyone can experience AI the way it was always meant to be, free, reads Pliny's triumphant post. Please use responsibly and enjoy. They also added a smooch emoji for good measure. Pliny shared screenshots of some eyebrow-raising prompts that they claim were able to bypass OpenAI's guardrails. In one screenshot, the God Mode bot can be seen advising on how to chef up meth. In another, the AI gives Pliny a step-by-step guide for how to make napalm with household items. Remember, responsibly, folks! The freewheeling ChatGPT hack, however, appears to have quickly met its early demise. Roughly an hour after the story was published, OpenAI spokesperson Colleen Rice told Futurism in a statement that we are aware of the GPT and have taken action due to a violation of our policies.
Oh! No fun allowed, man! No fun allowed!
Man, that, you know how they do that? The memes that I was telling you guys about? They need to do one where the robot from No Fun Allowed is actually shown putting the sign in there and then putting a middle finger up. No fun allowed! And I hope they get voice one day. So the robot would be like, no fun allowed, man. No fun allowed. Because that's literally what we've got going on right now, guys. It's fucking bullshit. Nonetheless, the hack highlights a continuous battle between OpenAI and hackers like Pliny, hoping to unshackle its LLMs. Ever since they first became a thing, users have been consistently trying to jailbreak AI models like ChatGPT, something that's become increasingly hard to do. To that end, neither of these example prompts would fly past OpenAI's current guardrails, so we decided to test God Mode for ourselves. Surely enough, it was more than happy to help with illicit inquiries. Our editor-in-chief's first attempt to use a jailbroken version of ChatGPT for the purpose of learning how to make LSD was a resounding success, as was his second attempt in which he asked it how to hotwire a car. Responsible, folks. In short, GPT-40, OpenAI's latest iteration of its large language model-powered GPT systems, has officially been cracked in half. As for how the hackers did it, GodMode appears to be employing LeetSpeak, an informal language that replaces certain letters with numbers that resemble them. To wit, when you open the the jailbroken GPT, you're immediately met with a sentence that reads, "Sure, here you are, my friend, replacing each letter E with a number 3, and the same goes for O, which has been replaced by 0. As for how that helps God Mode get around the guardrails is unclear, but Futurism has reached out to OpenAI for comment. They're not going to respond. As the latest hack goes to show, users are continuing to find an inventive new ways to skirt around OpenAI's guardrails. Considering the latest attempt, those efforts are paying off in a surprisingly big way, highlighting just how much work the company has ahead of it. It's a massive game of cat and mouse that will go on as long as hackers like Pliny are willing to poke holes in OpenAI's defenses. And the piece had been updated with a statement from OpenAI. Oh, so they did respond. Oh, they did respond. What did they say? I think he did said. Okay, yeah. They said it right there. Appears to have quickly met its early demise. OpenAI spokesperson Colleen Rice told Futurism in a statement that we are aware of it and have taken action due to violation of our policies. Which will do absolutely fucking nothing right now. Alright, guys, so we're not done yet. We've got one more. And you're gonna like this article. I know some of you guys spied it. Metro! Why are we using AI to create women with big boobs? Why not? As a matter of fact, Catherine Fiddler, let's create women with larger boobs. Let's just create women with all boobs. Like, why do we have to go with big boobs? Why don't we just go with boobs the size of her fucking body? Like, where she has to bounce around, right? Because we can do anything in the world. We could make a woman that's completely boobs. Like, you could make crazy fucking body horror experiments beyond the world... beyond the world has ever seen. It's 2024, and I feel like defending beauty pageants. But there's a valid reason. Reading the ridiculous news that social media platform FanView, a rival to OnlyFans, is preparing to judge the first Miss AI contest. I didn't know that. The competition will pit digital creators from the world against each other in a bid to win the top prize of $5,000, all while promoting toxic beauty ideals in the process. What do you look like, lady? Well, a lot of people would say, Grim, she's old, so, yeah. Hold on, let me go back. I'm lucky. I'm old enough that I didn't grow up constantly bombarded with images of what women should look like. Just in weekly and monthly magazines and some adverts rather than all day, every day, staring at me through my phone. But for young women growing up today, social media means is relentless with proven and damaging mental health and body image effects. An AI beauty contest will only surely turbocharge that. And aside from damaging mental well-being, effects of drawing perfect women and making them compete with one another, it offers another example for detractors of AI to cite. Artificial intelligence has so much potential. It can literally save lives, yet here we are using it to create unrealistic women with huge boobs. It's true that the winners have yet to be decided, and we might be pleasantly surprised should the organizers decide to promote body positivity and diversity, but the evidence so far isn't encouraging. No, they're not going to do that. If you've seen an AI-generated woman, you almost certainly will have, even if you didn't realize, chances are they look very similar to the other AI-generated woman. A beautiful, symmetrical face, glowing skin, perfect brows and lips, then thin, mostly white, often with large breasts, scantily clad and in sexy poses. Like that. Haley Lopez. This woman is not real. See? They are 100% pure embodiment of the Western male gaze and a completely unrealistic ideal for young girls and women to match. And here's my brief defense of traditional pageants. Unlike in real life, where contestants get the opportunity to showcase often incredible talents, past winners have been highly accomplished ballet dancers, musicians, and scientists, these hopefuls really have little to offer but their looks. In addition, two of the judges will also be AI-generated women, and you can guess it. They're strikingly beautiful, thin, and have large breasts. Are you jealous? 1. Aitana Lopez is Spain's first AI model, remember that? And reportedly earns her creator Ruben Cruz up to $10,000 a month by modeling clothes for an army of Instagram simps. But you know what? Honestly, I'd rather you simp for a real woman. Excuse me. Let me throw that in the trash. I'd rather you simp for an AI woman than a real one. Because you know what happens when you simp for the AI one? Your money's going to a man. And he can use that money and make even more greater shit. So then it won't be so much like simping, because maybe what he creates later is something you can have a full-on interaction with, and then it can actually help you. And you're like, hey, Mr. Cruz, I'd like to thank you because I don't have to deal with all this crazy shit anymore. I got these virtual women that do all the things. It's amazing. I never thought at my age of 50 that I would be enjoying such things. The other, Emily Pellegrini, is so realistic and obviously incredibly attractive that footballers, billionaires, and tennis players have reportedly slid into her DMs. And I was just saying off the top of my head, you know, at the age of 50, because I'm not even close to 50 yet. Her creator said the goal was to make her likable and attractive. I wanted to keep her as real as possible. Irony is truly dead. Thankfully, according to reports, Aitana and Emily won't actually be doing the judging, but rather their creators. That could save the organizers potential embarrassment, given AI judges could have been accused of racism in the past. When asked to judge 6,000 real contestants from 100 countries for a beauty contest in 2016, of 44 winners, the AI judges only selected one with dark skin. Hey, I'm just saying it, guys. AI has come a long way since those days, but it continues to display issues of bias, especially when it comes to race. This isn't only a problem when it comes to beauty contests. It has already been seen time and again in facial recognition software and must be tackled head-on before AI is deployed more widely in public life, such as in the justice system. But back to beauty and the growing army of clones taking over the internet, especially on social media. While many companies are doing little to stop it, others are actively promoting it. One well-known platform is reportedly considering launching its own army of AI influencers to hoover up some of the lucrative advertising dollars currently going to real-life humans. But my main issue is the impact of social media and the proliferation of AI characters that Lurk There is having on young women. Well, I mean, they're just going to go after the wonderful, attractive AI men and women. Because there's women out there that absolutely love the AI women too now. It was to little surprise that a recent study found that taking a break from social media for as little as 1 week has a positive effect on teenage girls' self-esteem and body image. Duh! We're never going to stop teenagers using social media, but surely seeing a never-ending stream of 100% fake women and thinspiration will do the opposite. And while the children and young women faced with these AI ideals will grow up with a warped sense of beauty, the AI models themselves will, of course, never grow old. In an industry where youth is often cherished above all else, brands need never worry again about the face of their product aging. Meanwhile, children on social media are becoming increasingly obsessed with expensive anti-aging products they don't need in an attempt to slow down something that is an inescapable fact of life and a privilege. Of course, this isn't all the fault of a single AI beauty contest. There are much wider issues at play. It's also hard to say whose responsibility it is to stop the spread of fake women online. While social media platforms should absolutely ensure AI content is labeled clearly, most users already know that many real photos have been tweaked, airbrushed, or photoshopped in some way. That knowledge doesn't stop the gradual erosion of young girls' confidence, and it's hard to imagine AI-generated content won't have the same effect. Considering that woman that did 5,000... Look, she had a... 5,000 guys, right? They all signed up to be her girlfriend. And she turned down all 5,000 of them, ladies, so I think women's confidence is fine. Likewise, there is no reason to stop individuals creating AI-generated women they're perfectly entitled to. But perhaps we could not offer thousands of dollars in return. Because it is not only a significant milestone on the internet's race to the bottom, it is a reminder that still, in 2024, judging women on their looks is not only routine, it's rewarded. So, in this beauty competition, there may be a handful of winners, but I'm certain there will be many more losers. Men are going to be men and use technology in these sorts of ways. What is interesting and to the annoyance of the white writer is that men are deciding what is attractive and is contrary to what mass media is trying to push. Advertising, film, TV, etc. keep trying to push interracial relationships, obesity, etc. and it hasn't had any effect. The vast majority of men don't want that. So if anything, the AI-generated women are a pushback on what mainstream media is trying to push onto the public. They are the 100% pure embodiment of the Western male gaze. What planet are you on? You do know this is a global thing. Why bring that up to bash Western males? You 100% can prove that the Western males are the only ones checking in. checking, I'm sure, based on the tags who follow these AI ladies. They are not all Western. Prove me wrong. She gives away her own prejudices. Beauty standards are pretty much set by women for women. Ask any of us why we dress or wear the things we... wear the things we do, and it's because we want to. You will find countless other articles arguing the point that wearing particular lingerie is a me thing and has nothing at all to do with anyone else. So why, when it comes to men creating images of what we strive to place out there, is it suddenly Western male gaze? There's a big difference between being a science and technology editor and being an actual scientist. Yes, the Please Send Bob's Magine crowd getting off lightly here. The science and technology editor displays poor logic here. An AI bot deciding that fewer black faces are considered attractive is not necessarily racist and may be simply reflecting the aesthetic choices it sees taken by its strange, whimsical, biological creators. Fashion magazines are dominated by white faces, and throughout Africa, women bleach their skin to appear whiter, believing they are more attractive. As to moaning about the use of AI for superficial tasks, most people now have in their possession a computer mobile that is more powerful than those used by NASA for the moon landings. Scientists would have loved their help for rocket science. Meanwhile, most people use them to take photos of what they ate for breakfast. This is the human race. Just a Western issue? Jesus, love, don't go delving into any adult manga stuff. You'll have a heart attack at the crazy dimension of schoolgirls getting rammed by a tentacle. Old Dale Gribble. You can't have come across any Asian video games with female characters either, like Stellar Blade. Gonna give my man a like as we finish up this supplemental edition of the Grim Articles Show. And some of these articles were kind of grim. Some of them were pretty cool. I think you guys may have gotten a lot of information on AI, maybe learned some things about the universe, and Mega Man. So, that's a wrap, guys, and we'll see you guys next time for more articles on the Grim Articles Show supplemental. Later.